Hello, welcome to the latest episode of the Dialogue Out Loud series. I'm Charlotte Hanson-Terry, the personal voices editor for Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. And today we are excited to speak with Tammy Grounsell and Catherine Paul about their personal voices essays in the winter 2024 issue. This is a special issue on the theme of the family and Latter-day Saint thought and culture, and the whole issue is dedicated to that theme. There are five personal voice essays in the winter 2024 issue, and again, we're glad to be able to have two of our authors with us today. Tammy has a spotty internet, so if we lose her, we'll continue the conversation, and hopefully she can rejoin. But I'm really excited for us to have this conversation today with Tammy and Catherine, particularly about their essays. So to start, I'm going to ask Tammy this first. Can you tell us more about your background and what drew you to the work that you specifically do?
Okay, so background, let me think. I've grown up in the UK. I've lived briefly in the States and Australia, but most spend the vast majority of my time in the UK. I grew up in the church. I'm the eldest of seven children, a typical Mormon family in the UK in the 70s and 80s. But very atypical for the rest of the UK, obviously. I don't know. I'm a high school teacher. I've taught English, and I have taught English as additional language. And I've also spent quite a lot of time teaching dyslexia and neurodivergent students. I really actually enjoy that. I enjoy doing that. I, as an English teacher, obviously, always think that you're going to write and never have the time to do it because you're too busy marking other people's writing. But a couple of years ago, I opened a cafe instead. And that has now passed on to my niece, but that has meant that I have had a little bit of time to think and write. And this is the first thing that I've actually written and felt okay enough about to actually send in somewhere proper. I've had other things. I'm part of local poetry groups and writing groups, and I've had things printed and published in local things, but nothing glamorous. It was nudging the back of my mind, actually, this topic. And when I saw the theme of this issue advertised, I just thought, oh, that's it. That's where it needs to go. Because I didn't really understand where it would go, which is why I'd never written it, if that makes sense. This the theme for this issue just fitted at the right time, the right place. So I just sat down and wrote it one evening, actually, while everyone was watching TV. It wasn't even it just all came out, and then obviously read it over, but it was already there. I think I'd thought about it for a long time.
Thank you. That was really great to hear about that process that you went through with this one, especially. So Catherine, I'm going to pose the same question to you, kind of your background and what kind of brought you to the work that you're doing, and you can connect it also to the essay that you have in this issue too.
So I thought Tammy's intro captured a common thread for all of the five essays. Okay. And she wrote, "A family is a thing with edges. The edges can grow, shrink, smooth off, and get spiky and sharp. The changes that happen can be full of joy, sadness, loss, trauma, comfort, or strength. None of those are mutually exclusive." And I thought that Tammy's intro also kind of characterized the story of my life. So I'll tell you a little bit about that. So I've had a major depressive disorder since I was a child, and my father, his mother, and her father both all had debilitating depression. So there's a genetic element to my depression, but there's also an environmental factor. When I was 8 years old, my father was killed in a violent Minnesota storm, and my mother suffered a traumatic frontal lobe brain injury in that same accident. And so trauma, neglect, and abuse were also part of my mental health challenges. So I started graduate school at BYU when I was a divorced mother with three little children under the age of seven. And I could relate to Tammy's description of the stigma of less than perfect lives in the 80s and 90s. At the time, I actually believed that divorced people were defective and that working mothers didn't really love their children. And so when I was horrified when suddenly I was a defective divorced woman and now I was going to have to put my children in daycare because I was going to have to go to school so that I could become an evil working mother. And one of my brothers said to me, you know that in the church, a divorced woman with three children is the social equivalent of a leper. And then when I was looking for an apartment in Utah Valley, the apartment manager said to me, oh, are you divorced? And I said, well, I'm in the process. Yeah, I'm getting divorced. And she said, well, my in-laws own these apartments and my mother-in-law really doesn't like to rent to divorced people. Hopefully things are better now than they were back in the 80s and 90s. So at BYU, I completed an MA in teaching English as a second language. So that's also part of my teaching experience. And I also completed my secondary ed certification in English and ESL. So I've taught at BYU, and I was also a high school English teacher. And while I was teaching English, I married the database guru who's helping me today with my technical problems. But he claims that he flunked English three times and almost didn't graduate because he refused to read The Hobbit. And so when he called his kids to tell him he was going to marry an English teacher who taught 10th grade English and made her students read The Hobbit, his kids didn't believe him. And we've been married for 21 years. And now you want to know about how I ended up writing my essay, right? That's why I'm doing this? Okay. So I'm a person who has over 35 journals, so I've always been a writer, right? And they're actually filled. My husband has about 30 empty journals. He writes one sentence and writes. But so I've always just loved reading and writing. And so I actually had like an essay published in the Segula's collection of like motherhood essays in 2010. But then my life got really complicated because of my son's issues. And so I didn't really write until, except I'd write sacrament meeting talks, right? That's the only thing I would really write. So in the conclusion of my essay, I wrote, when our ward transitioned to remote Sunday devotionals during the 2020 pandemic, assigned speakers would pre-record their talks and post them on the ward's YouTube site. When I was asked to prepare a talk on the blessings of temple work, I shared the healing blessings I had received from temple work after the trauma of my son's suicide. As I prayerfully wrote and rewrote my talk, I felt impressed to include my son's message of regret and his hope that others would choose a different path. After the devotional, I felt impressed to share the YouTube link of my talk with our extended family, who also in the essay I described that there's lots of depression in our extended family because of the genetic factors. And sometimes I feel impressed to share the link with friends who are worried about family members and want my advice. And I say, I don't have any advice to give them, but Dylan, my son, does. And so it's interesting because I shared the YouTube link with my friend. I have a close friend who's a writer and a professional editor. And after watching it, my friend suggested that I should tweak the talk and make it into a personal essay and submit it to a LDS journal, right? And I was kind of like, yeah, right. So I ignored her advice until I got a New Year's Eve priesthood blessing after, this is important, on January 14th of 2024, I got this priesthood blessing, okay? And in the blessing, I was told that I would dust off my talents and have a renaissance in 2024, okay? So the next day, on January 15th, I woke up at 5 a.m. and the Spirit says to me, remember how Melissa got that essay published in an LDS journal? Google her name and find out the name of the journal. And so I did, and it was Dialogue, okay? So I immediately Googled the submission requirements for Dialogue, and I discovered that they were seeking submissions for a family-themed issue. And the deadline, this will make me cry, and the deadline was January 15th, that same day that I was woke up at 5 a.m., okay? So I instantly knew I needed to, like, tweak my devotional talk and into a personal essay and submit it to Dialogue, so I did, okay? And I've asked myself, like, why was I prompted to submit this essay to Dialogue, right? Because it was kind of dramatic. And so a couple of months after Dialogue accepted my essay, I was in South Africa with my daughter, and we made friends with this couple in the back of the bus, on the tour bus, and they were telling me that their friend's daughter had committed suicide, and that afterwards they discovered that she had been reading some website that promoted the benefits of suicide. And I didn't even know that websites like that existed. But I feel like my son's anti-suicide message in this essay has helped me to deal with my own battle with depression, and maybe it could help others. And even if it just helps one person, then it's worth it to me. That's my story.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
All right. Tammy, I have a question for you. It builds off of what Catherine has been talking about, of how you see your essay engaging with these other ones in this issue that has, again, around this theme of the family. How do you see yours engaging, you know, with Catherine's or with others that are within this issue? Because we have, again, a great group of personal voice essays that I think were chosen.
Beautiful.
So go ahead, Tammy. Yeah.
I don't really know what you mean by how do you see them engaging.
Do you see certain themes, for instance, of things that you talked about in your essay? Do you see some of those themes coming up in some of the other ones?
All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, obviously, Kathy and I have got a lot of similarities in our experiences. And I was quite amazed, actually, when I read hers in particular, just the connections that we had in our experiences. I was really interested particularly in, there was Catherine's and there was one other who they talked very specifically about relationships with people who had died, and that their relationships were continuing and they were still alive. Their relationships were alive, I suppose. And that really fascinated me because that was an aspect, that's an aspect of my story that I hadn't ever shared or even said out loud to myself, I suppose. I've had a couple of really powerful experiences that have let me know how the baby that I had, how he feels or how he was feeling at that moment. And I don't think we don't have that relationship that Catherine has with her son. How can we have that relationship? We didn't spend time together here. But I had one experience where I just knew there was something that I needed to say to him, and that I needed to go to the temple and And so I did. And that was, I went to the temple, and whilst I was there, I said the things I needed to say. It wasn't much, but, and it felt very empty, as though I'd made it all up in my head. And, but, and this often happens to me when I go to the temple, as I, when you come out of Preston Temple in the north of England, to head back to Scotland where I live, you kind of, there's a complicated junction and a big roundabout, and then you turn off left, and then that's it. It's just one road for however many hundred miles it is back home again. And so once you're on that road, I kind of relaxed, and it's that moment then that I had my experience, I suppose, where I knew that he'd heard, and I knew that he had a response, but he was thinking about it. And for me, that was amazing. Just just obviously we teach that we have an afterlife, and we teach that the people are busy and that they're real people and real people doing things, and you know, and I love the idea that progression is eternal, you know, that we continue to progress. Everything just doesn't stop when we finish this life. But it was just a real, it was great just to know that that there was a connection, I suppose. And that, he was learning. That was the impression that I got, that he was learning things, and there was things he was starting to understand. And that was really, yeah, obviously really great for me. But yeah, that's one of the major themes, I guess, that we connect on.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that too. Catherine, is there anything you want to add about, you've talked a little bit about how you see some connections between yours and Tammy's piece. But if I wanted to give you a chance, if there was anything else you wanted to mention that you could.
Well, first I have to say, I've already told you guys this, but I cried the first time I read Tammy's essay, and I reread it last night, and I cried again. Because I feel like we really do have a connection. I was a foster mother of a teenaged pregnant teenager or who was 17 years old back in the late 80s, and it was through LDS Social Services, and that was just like a really tender spiritual experience, because just like, and I feel like when Tammy shares that about her spiritual experiences, I just, like, nobody thought it was cool that I was a foster mother. Like, my husband was in high tech, and all our friends were in high tech world in San Diego, and they all thought I was weird to have this 17-year-old, right? But I just felt this incredible love from Heavenly Father for both my foster daughter and for her baby. Like, I just felt this incredible love, and so it was this beautiful experience. And I also wanted to share that the first Christmas that my two adult children couldn't be with me at Christmas time, I was like really feeling sorry for myself, you know, because Christmas was so deeply tied with children, and I was like really depressed. And my son Dylan, my deceased son, communicate with me and said, "Mom, I'm going to be with you on Christmas Eve. You're never alone." And ever since then, I've never complained about being alone on Christmas Eve, because I always knew my son was with me. And so it's a really tender relationship. I also want to say, after my son's suicide, I was teaching primary, and to this group of little girls, and in the middle of my lesson, one of the girls suddenly said, "My mother says your son is going to hell." And I replied, "Well, President Watson spoke at the funeral of Marie Osmond's son, and he said that Heavenly Father understands that their brains weren't working properly, and so he is very merciful and kind. And the little girl appeared to think about that for a second, and then she said, I guess President Monson knows more than my mother. And I was like, probably so. And then I just went on with my lesson. And then after, I thought, do we even use that expression, go to hell? I don't think we do, right? But my relationship with Jesus Christ has always been like based on love and kindness. And my relationships with mere mortals have not always been kind. So mere mortals can be judgmental and ignorant and cruel. But Aubrey Johnson, who also wrote another essay right for this issue, she wrote that humans are messy. Humans have always been messy. The church is messy now, and it was messy 100 to 150 years ago. And it was messy 2,000 years ago, right? And I loved that quote. So I always have to remind myself that God only has messy, mere mortals to work with. And so I just try to focus on my kind and loving relationships with Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ. But life is messy. And so I was thinking all of our five essays that are just beautiful. I just love all five. I'm hoping they'll help readers be less messy and more compassionate. That's what I wanted to say.
All said.
Because I don't know how you felt, Tammy, but like, I was really nervous because I thought my essay was going to be the only one that was so deeply personal and had really tender mm-hmm. spiritual experiences in it. And then when I read all five, I was like, oh.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, right. Definitely. And also, I think we tend to be in the church, we hide things, don't we? We hide a lot of things to do with our personal lives because that's not what people want to see on a Sunday. And I think, yeah, it was great just feeling that connection with all the other four people who had just said, actually, no, this was messy, this had, you know, this went wrong, I went wrong, you know, things go wrong, and yet actually we're all still standing at the end. It's good.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. So really quickly, just to finish up, are there any other projects or things that you're currently involved in or work that you'd like to share with our listeners? And if not, don't worry about it. But if there is something that you want to bring up, please feel free. And I'll let's have Tammy go first. If she says it. Yeah.
I can. I am writing something at the moment. I think I wrote it too big and now I'm having to make it smaller, if that makes sense. But it's really, it feels silly. But last year, as we started to read the Book of Mormon, right at the beginning of First Nephi, Nephi keeps repeating, and my father lived in a tent, in various forms throughout, right at the beginning. But each time he says it, it seems to me that he was slightly more incredulous as he said it. And so it just really struck me, this idea of this family who are used to the comforts of life, suddenly living as refugees do in tents and being refugees. At the time, I just finished teaching some refugee students. And so it really, this idea of this being displaced, and I started wondering, what is the most essential thing? What would you have in your tent? What's the most important thing? And then that coloured the rest of my Book of Mormon reading all last year. And I've got the word tent and wilderness written everywhere throughout the Book of Mormon. And so I've written, I guess I've kind of half written something because I've had to take it apart again. But just about tents and what that means. and what should be in there, and who should be in there. And yeah, it doesn't really make sense at the moment, but I'm hoping it will do at some point.
Yeah, it sounds exciting. Yeah. Okay, same question. Same question.
Tammy, you're a beautiful, I just want to say, you're a beautiful writer. And I think you should keep on writing, because you have a gift, okay?
Thank you. From one English teacher to another.
Yes. Yeah. That's my favorite. That's my happy place, is hanging out with English teachers. Charlotte, is it okay if I briefly talk about how my work engages with larger issues and conversations?
Definitely.
Okay.
For it.
So, first of all, when I was reading the mission statement of Dialogue that's in the front of the book, I really felt like that our essays kind of examine the relevance of religion to the travails of everyday life. So all five essays really fit into the mission statement. So after I started writing again in 2024, and I will say there was a renaissance, because I also had a piece printed in Exponent 2 in their last issue. But I read a lot of online and in print conversations with Mormon studies. And I was kind of disappointed by almost 100% of the everything that was written about the temple was kind of disparaging. Okay. Mm-hmm. And including like one person who accused an acquaintance of escaping to the temple instead of facing the reality of life, okay? That person did that too much. So after my son's suicide, I'd wake up sometimes in the morning and just feel overwhelmed by how horrific my life was. And I would like throw on some clothes, and I would go to the Provo Temple just so I could feel peace for a couple hours and keep going and have the strength to keep going, okay? But also when I felt overwhelmed in graduate school, because I was a single mother with three little kids, I would go to the temple every single week because I desperately needed the extra strength I got from going to the temple. And on Monday this week, I actually got a breast cancer diagnosis. So yesterday I was in the temple for three endowment sessions, and I didn't want to leave because of the peace and love I felt in the temple, that I felt like everything was going to be okay as long as I was in the temple, right? But I was also actually an ordinance worker for 5 years and before the pandemic. And when the church started changing things in the temple, I had this kind of snooty attitude, like, well, none of that stuff ever bothered me, you know, because I'm so holy. And the Spirit suddenly chastised me and said, if Heavenly Father wants all of his daughters to be comfortable in the temple, who are you to judge? And I was like, zzz. So I've learned to be more compassionate, but I also feel like the members who love the temple should also be a voice in the Mormon studies conversation. It shouldn't just all be disparaging comments. And then the most fun project I'm working on currently, as I was having a conversation with my granddaughters, I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old granddaughter, and we, they're daughters of Dylan's older brother. Okay. So I was telling my granddaughters that their uncle Dylan was actually funnier than their dad. And they were like, what? They said, we find that very hard to believe. Our dad is very funny. And so I got the idea that I should create a book, like a children's book called Uncle Dilly, and I would share all the fun things that Uncle Dilly had done. And I'd also share some of the really cool guardian angel experiences we've had since he died, and, you know, that are really kind of amazing. And I felt like I'm going to create that. So I'm working on that this year, because I think it will make my Uncle Dylan become alive to them. And they'll actually like look forward to meeting him someday. And I know my son will love that too. Like that'll make him happy too. Because I say in the essay that I know that Dylan knew he would have loved being an uncle. Like that's one of the things he really misses. So that's what I'm working on, besides some other essays, but they're boring.
For sure.
Well, again, thank you to both of you for joining with us today and talking about your work. It's been a lovely conversation to hear more about the process that you went through and the experiences that you had. And again, both of your essays were just so beautiful to read and very powerful. So I'm really excited for our readers to have a chance to read them themselves. So again, for our listeners, we encourage you to check out all these essays in the Winter 2024 issue, and of course, other personal voice essays on the website at dialoguejournal.com. Thank you to our listeners for joining us today. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues. We encourage you to get in touch with questions or comments, and we look forward to continuing the discussion on Mormon Studies Scholarship.
Greetings, my name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.